It's a public relations thing. You got to convince the public that we're cutting the budget. We are not cutting spending.
Congress pushes for another ban on earmarks. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, November 15th. Good evening. I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the emerging science of ice islands in the warming Arctic. Massive chunks of glaciers that break free.
In terms of thickness, these ice islands can reach 50, 60 meters depth within the water column.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Senate Republicans are vowing to continue a moratorium on earmarks this coming Congress. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, it could have repercussions in Alaska since the state relies so heavily on federal funding.
Both chambers of Congress adopted a two-year ban on congressionally directed spending for the current session that's winding down. Earmarks, the pet projects of lawmakers that the federal government picks up the tab for, came under scrutiny because of projects like a would-be bridge between Gravina and Ketchikan. Dubbed the Bridge to Nowhere, it became the poster child of runaway spending. And since then, lawmakers in both parties have railed against them. But veteran appropriators like U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski say the approach is misguided.
We have taken an approach that I think is designed to be more of a public relations thing. You got to convince the public that we're cutting the budget. We are not cutting spending. We're letting the executive branch determine the priorities.
Senator Murkowski says she voted no Wednesday when her party put the earmark ban up for consideration in a closed-door meeting. Senate Democrats have yet to decide whether to reinstate earmarks. Senator Mark Begich's assessment of the Republicans' move?
That's too bad.
Senator Begich says he'll work to remove the ban because the spending is essential to infrastructure projects in the state. Though he says with shrinking federal coffers, Alaska needs to pony up its share for projects like improvements to the Seward Highway.
You look at that need on that road, the safety hazard it is. It's going to take a lot of money, and the state has to put a little more on the table than they have in the past.
Earmarks rarely account for more than 1% of the overall federal budget. Most spending goes to entitlement programs and the Defense Department. All of those, including Medicare and Medicaid, will come under scrutiny in the coming debate on corralling the federal deficit. Alaska receives more federal aid than any other state, more than twice the U.S. average in 2010. The state is also richer than it's ever been before, says Juno economist Greg Erickson. And despite the state's financial health, the permanent fund is worth $42 billion and the state operates in the black, local issues cannot always get the money they need. So earmarks remain important.
Well, they're a very big deal for the village that is seeing its coastline destroyed and that needs maybe $20,000 per resident to move that village to some place where it can be sustained. A very big deal because that's probably not going to be a project that's going to garner the kind of support to be funded in the normal course of things.
Whether or not both parties in both houses of Congress opt to reinstate earmarking, the state will continue to receive billions of dollars in federal money for the military, health care, and transportation. Some local projects, though, may be more difficult to fund than others. And it's up to the congressional delegation to prove to their colleagues that it's worth the taxpayers' dime. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
The oil and gas industry, government agencies, and scientists are meeting this week in Anchorage to talk about Arctic oil and gas development. A wide range of issues is being discussed, everything from spill response to ice tracking to wildlife changes. It is well known that over the past decade, the sea ice has been melting back to record levels. But what is less well known is how to track some of the large and dangerous pieces of ice that have been breaking loose. APRN's Steve Heimel tells us more.
They're huge, they're unstoppable, and they extend so deep into the water that they dig up the ocean floor. They are ice islands broken off from glaciers and ice shelves in the far north of Canada's Ellesmere Island. University of Manitoba researcher David Babb has been tracking them as part of a multi-year study by the Canadian government, native groups, and the oil industry.
These ice islands pose a huge potential to any development in the Arctic and are of particular interest to any development company.
They are a hazard because an ice island's sheer mass is such that any oil and gas drilling effort in its path would simply have to disconnect and get out of its way. Detecting and tracking them is a developing science, though if you're actually on the scene, it's not all that hard to spot one from an aircraft.
They stand out quite a bit from the surrounding sea ice because they have a gray gravel-covered surface. The gravel on these ice islands can be as small as pebbles, but we've also encountered rocks the size of small cars on top of these ice islands.
Ice islands get caught up with the rest of the sea ice, and they drift in much the same way, but they don't melt away for years. And while sea ice might be 12 feet thick or so, an ice island is more than 10 times that thick and can be miles across.
Not only spatially, they're, you know, a couple kilometers across by another couple kilometers, but in terms of thickness, these ice islands can reach 50, 60 meters depth within the water column.
And that kind of depth could easily damage a subsea pipeline. Researchers have been coming across ice islands for many years. But when the Canadian research effort in the Beaufort Sea just past the Alaska border undertook a systematic survey, they discovered they're not all that uncommon in that part of the Arctic Ocean.
They're large, but they're not big enough to be spotted by satellite. So we came across them during our surveys. Last summer, I believe we saw about 10 to 15 of these ice island features.
The research team put radio tracking tags on all the ice islands they found, but they do break up and the pieces move apart. Efforts will continue to find a remote sensing technology that can detect them. It could be that ice islands would help provide an explanation for why this summer's satellite images showed no ice in the walrus habitat of Hannah Shoal in the Chukchi Sea, but nobody told the walruses, who somehow still had ice there for their pupping and foraging all summer. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
An unattended candle likely caused last week's fire at the Gastineau Apartments in downtown Juneau. Fire Marshal Dan Jaeger says an investigation determined the blaze started in the bedroom of an apartment on the fourth floor in the back corner of the building.
We know that the fire occurred on the floor in close proximity of a bed that was in there. This was all verified by the occupant who had come home and found the fire. We can't pin down that it was an unattended candle, but after eliminating all the other potentials, that's the only possible heat source that we can find where the fire had started.
Jaeger declined to name the person who lived in the apartment because he does not expect any criminal charges or citations. He and Fire Chief Rich Etheridge spent most of Monday assisting three insurance companies with their investigations.
They did a walk through the building to see overall how the damage was and took their own photographs, took notes. They'll be doing their own interviews with occupants. A lot of it's stuff that we've already done, but it's them doing their own independent investigation.
The building itself was insured along with two businesses on the ground floor. Jaeger also believes some tenants may have had renter's insurance. The structure and property were valued at $1.8 million before the fire. Jaeger says he's still working on an estimated dollar value for all the damage, which would include people's personal belongings. The building's owner, James Barrett, says he will wait for the insurance companies to complete their investigations before deciding whether to tear down or rebuild. Jaeger says unattended candles are often responsible for residential fires. In most cases, he says, it's completely avoidable.
They seem like they're very safe, but we always tell people, you know, if you're going to leave the room, just blow the candle out.
Jaeger recommends various alternatives such as electric candles or candle warmers for people who still want the ambience or aroma without the risk of fire. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a discrimination case that will be decided by the state Supreme Court.
The city taxes people who are in same-sex partnerships more than people who are in straight relationships.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
Attorneys argued before the Supreme Court of Alaska yesterday whether same-sex couples in the municipality of Anchorage should be treated the same as married couples when it comes to property taxes. The case involves three same-sex couples denied a senior tax exemption allowed under state law. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
In Alaska, there's a tax break for property owners 65 years and older and disabled veterans, which eliminates taxes on the first $150,000 value of property. Lance Nelson with the Alaska Attorney General's Office argued on behalf of the state that the statute and regulation on the books should be interpreted to limit the exemption for same-sex couples so that they only get part of the discount. Nelson based his argument on a tenancy by entirety statute, which presumes that each member of a married couple owns 100% of property.
The legal effect of that is that each member of the tenancy owns 100% unapportioned value of the property. And that's why the tax assessors in the state give full benefit to an eligible person who owns and occupies even if his spouse may not be his or her spouse may not be eligible.
But you have to be married. Since same-sex couples can't legally marry in Alaska, they can't claim 100% of the discount. Nelson says that's fair because of the marriage amendment, which, since it was passed by ballot initiative in 1998, defines marriage as between a man and a woman in Alaska.
You could call it something else and bestow some other kinds of rights and something, but as far as rights connected to marriage, those all were limited by the marriage amendment when it took effect.
Attorneys representing the three same-sex couples in Anchorage say taxing same-sex couples differently from straight married ones is not fair and does not provide equal protection under the law. Roger Leishman, an attorney with the law firm Davis Wright & Tremaine, argued on behalf of the same-sex couples, saying his clients were being singled out as members of an unpopular minority.
If you look at the factors that traditionally have been applied to identify a suspect classification, they are all present here. An identifiable group, a characteristic that should not be lightly changed, if it can be changed at all, like religion, a history of political inability to using the normal democratic process, achieve full equality. All of the indicia are there.
The case was first heard in Anchorage Superior Court in 2010. The Superior Court ruled in favor of the same-sex couples, saying it was unfair to tax them differently and that doing so violated equal protection. The state filed an appeal in 2011. Julie Schmidt is one of the plaintiffs in the case. She and her partner, Gail Hsu, say they've lived together for 35 years. 9 years ago, they bought a home in Eagle River together. When Schmidt turned 65, they applied for the senior tax exemption. It was granted, but not in full. Schmidt explained that the case is not just about money.
We're basically about the fairness and the discrimination that is shown to gay and lesbians in the tax structure.
Attorney Thomas Stenson with the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska Foundation says this case highlights an injustice.
The city taxes people who are in same-sex partnerships more than people who are in straight relationships. And so when Gail and Julie applied for the exemption, they got a partial exemption, but they were still taxed several hundred dollars more each year than a similarly situated married couple would be.
In 2005, the Supreme Court of Alaska decided same-sex couples were eligible under the Constitution's Equal Protection Clause to the same state worker benefits that married couples receive. Stenson says the decision the court makes in this case could set another precedent. The Supreme Court will likely issue a decision in the case in 2013. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Residents in the Norton Sound region had good reason to come together yesterday. The Norton Sound Health Corporation held a grand opening celebration in Nome, marking the upcoming opening of the new Norton Sound Regional Hospital. KNOM's Lorelei Kanin has the story.
With a crowd of people from throughout the region looking on outside the state-of-the-art 150,000-square-foot facility, Norton Sound Health Corporation Board Chair Emily Hughes cut the blue ribbon, marking the grand opening of the new Norton Sound Regional Hospital. 29-year board member and 13-year board chair, she said with emotion that the board has had the vision for decades to build a state-of-the-art facility.
I was just kind of overwhelmed and overjoyed because it was finally a reality, something that all of our patients can say, wow, I own that. This is my hospital, and happy our patients can have better care, faster service.
The 150,000-square-foot hospital replaces a more than 60-year-old facility. In 1977, the corporation purchased the Maynard McDougall Memorial Methodist Hospital in Nome. Today, residents still receive care inside portions of the original building, built in 1948. Hughes says the new facility is ultimately about improving patient care.
You don't need to wait 3 weeks for a pair of glasses. We have our own lab there. We have the dental that you can get your dentures worked on. We have a crowning machine that you can get your crowns made here. So without having to get the impressions in the lab, we'll have digital equipment like in the lab and the dental lab. It's just amazing when you walk through the facility. Just trying to make it more accessible for the patients and a lot easier.
The hospital serves 17 communities in the Norton Sound region, covering 23,088 square miles in northwest Alaska on the Seward Peninsula. Most of the funding for today's state-of-the-art facility was provided by the American Recovery Act, signed by President Obama in 2009. Only two Native hospital projects in the country received funding through the act: the Norton Sound Project, and a hospital in Eagle Butte, South Dakota. Former NSHC President and CEO Carolyn Crowder served as CEO for nearly 20 years in the 80s and 90s. She said yesterday that seeing the new hospital was a powerful experience because in the early days of running the corporation, self-governance itself was a new concept, as was managing health care within the Indian Health Service system.
And I've seen just tremendous growth in the power of a community getting together, leadership getting together from, you know, a huge geographically diverse communities that exist within our region come together for the common purpose of wanting to build, a better world, better health care for our people.
Crowder says that with the new facility comes an increased staffing package from the Indian Health Service. While the grand opening took place yesterday, the hospital will not be fully open to patients in the Norton Sound area until January 30th. Reporting in Nome, I'm Lorelei Kanin.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
It's been 4 months since an ammonia spill on a processing vessel shut down parts of Unalaska. Now, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration has wrapped up their investigation into the accident. The result? More than $55,000 in fines and some valuable lessons for emergency responders. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports.
This July, the Seattle-based processing vessel Excellence was on its way to Unalaska when the crew discovered a tiny leak in their ammonia line. They tried to empty it out and called Alpha Welding to patch the hole. According to Scott Ketchum, OSHA's Anchorage Area Director, that's where the trouble started.
The ammonia line would have been, or should have been, evacuated. And in this case, the valve was not locked out. and they cut into a live line.
That oversight is one of five worker safety violations that OSHA found on the Excellence. All five were rated serious, and one was a repeat offense. So that added up to $50,000 in fines for the seafood company that owns the vessel. In all, two welders and a crew member from the Excellence were exposed to a cloud of ammonia. They were sent to the hospital, where one welder was treated for serious lung damage. The rest of the ship's crew was evacuated, and roads around the Klusterborg cold storage dock, where the Excellence was tied up, had to be shut down. Abner Hoag had been Unalaska's fire chief for just 2 weeks when the spill happened. He was fresh out of the Air Force and had just moved to town from Idaho. While he was up for a challenge, he didn't know what kind of assistance he could expect. Fortunately, it didn't take long for local processors to offer help.
Westward provided personnel to participate in the command structure, a refrigeration expert that helped us out a lot. UNICE was down there with their hazmat team and their personnel. Alyeska had people down there with equipment and personnel.
The plants also offered to house the displaced crew of 130 people for more than a week while the Excellence was fixed. In a way, Hoag says the accident had its upsides.
I got to meet people and develop relationships with the industry and the other resources in the community that may have taken me a year to otherwise meet.
Hoag says he's also writing up agreements with the processors that lay out their response capabilities so the city's more prepared for future emergencies. In the wake of the ammonia leak, the city also learned it can call on Anchorage's fire department. That agency has said they're willing to charter a plane or use military aircraft to get to Unalaska in the case of a big emergency. For now, OSHA's case against the Excellence is still open. Anchorage area director Scott Ketchum says the vessel's owner has been extremely cooperative. Premier Pacific Seafoods has planned a serious overhaul of their safety system, which he says helped them get their fines reduced from $65,000 to $50,000.
Yes, there was some reductions in return for good faith. They gave us some really good abatement or correction for these things happening in the future, and I feel very comfortable with the other contractor.
By other contractor, he means Alpha Welding. OSHA found that they didn't have the right permits or properly fitted safety equipment when they took on the Excellence welding job. Their fine was only $4,000. But they say they've spent five times that amount on new safety programs and permits. And going forward, Alpha Welding has a new rule when working on refrigeration systems. They won't make the first cut into a pipe that could potentially contain ammonia. Instead, they'll leave that up to the ship's crew. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
About 36% of students in the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District are overweight or obese. That, according to a new study published by the Alaska Division of Public Health. KBVI's Aaron Selbig has the details.
The impetus of the study came from MAP, or Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnerships, a Homer coalition that's been working to collect health-related information across the Kenai Peninsula. In 2010, MAP compiled health data on students on the southern Kenai Peninsula. The school board found that information useful and decided to expand the study district-wide. The latest study was conducted last school year using data collected by school nurses as part of an annual student health assessment. State analysts at the Department of Health and Social Services used height and weight values to calculate body mass index, or BMI, for more than 7,000 students in all grades from pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. The findings were shared with the school board at its meeting Monday and have been published online. District Superintendent Dr. Steve Atwater says he was not surprised by the results.
It's a little disappointing that about 36% of our students are considered either overweight or obese, and I'm not really that surprised since it's consistent with what we're finding elsewhere in the state. But again, it points to the fact that we are a less than healthy group of people, and we need to improve that way. So it's a good start for us, a good baseline from which we can work.
The percentage of obese and overweight students on the Kenai Peninsula is not much different than the rest of the state. Students in the Anchorage School District have been found to be at about the same 36% level as the peninsula, but a study in the Mat-Su Valley found only about 26% of students there to be overweight or obese. Here on the peninsula, the study found that 63% of students are at a healthy weight, and just over 1% are underweight. Males are slightly more likely to be overweight or obese than females, 37.6% to 34.1%. The grade with the highest percentage of overweight students was pre-kindergarten with 42.3%, while only 30.8% of third graders fell into that category. The study also found that racial and ethnic minorities, particularly Alaskan Native and American Indian students, were at higher risk, with nearly half of them overweight or obese. Atwater says the school district has already taken several measures in recent years to combat the obesity problem among students.
We have a wellness policy that's in place, and that does things like ban the sale of unhealthy food and beverages and vending machines. We also offer free and reduced breakfasts and lunches to our students, of course, at 30 of our schools. And we have a fresh fruit and vegetable program at 13 of our schools that serve about 3,200 primarily elementary students. So we're trying hard that way. We also were recognized for doing education with our students with regard to nutrition and physical exercise. At four of our schools, we received recognition for that. So there's a variety of things we're doing.
On the state level, the Department of Health and Social Services launched the Play Every Day campaign earlier this year to raise awareness about the risks of childhood obesity and to encourage children to be more physically active. The MAP Coalition has also responded to the problem, implementing several school-based childhood obesity prevention initiatives that are supported by the school district, including USDA People's Garden projects on school grounds, a school-based nutrition education pilot project, and collaboration with Nature Rocks Homer, a group on the Southern Peninsula focused on access to outdoor physical activity for children. Dr. Ward Hurlbert is Alaska's chief medical officer. He considers childhood obesity the predominant public health threat of this generation because, he says, obese children are more likely to experience health problems like diabetes and asthma. Dr. Atwater agrees.
It's clear that students who do suffer from obesity tend to do more poorly at school and also have a higher level of absenteeism. So the theory is if you can counter some of this, the kids will have a better school experience and have more success later on.
Atwater says the study will be repeated annually and the data gathered will be used as a baseline to measure future progress. The complete report can be found at the Department of Health and Social Services website, dhss.alaska.gov. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Lorelei Kanin in Nome, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. APRN's Peter Granitz reported from Washington, D.C., and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spack. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska. Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.